Oh, we're starting. I don't even realize it was going.
Well, I haven't quite got it going, but it's kind of going.
I haven't finished.
This is the first time you're not listening to your mic with headphones on.
So. I haven't finished building my GT2 RS.
Yeah.
I'm just going to continue. That
in a little bit. Today, we've got some awesome stuff lined up. Some bit of a sneak peek. Corey builds his GT2 RS. Corey builds his GT2 RS. And Corey builds his GT2 RS. Let's start the podcast now. All right, so no, we're not just building GT2 RS as the whole thing, although that's what Corey's doing right now. How's that going?
Oh, so well. Miami blue looks absolutely fantastic, but I can't decide whether I like lava orange more. True Porsche colors. There are some pretty fantastic selections here.
Yeah, well, I have to admit, the price tag does go up quite significantly.
The most expensive GT2 RS in the world.
When you start adding those leather seats and everything else that isn't required, the new GT2 RS is out, and that's literally what Porsche's come with is nothing. So you need to do all the whole spec out.
It's incredible how they can base a car off that sort of value, and then you literally haven't even got to like the basics yet.
The car doesn't even come with heated seats.
You're still questioned as to whether or not you want air conditioning in yours.
It doesn't come with option. It's optional air conditioning.
Optional AC.
Do you want to freeze?
And model designation, why would you debadge a GT2 RS?
Yeah, I don't know. How much does that cost?
It's $0.
Oh, well, that's not too bad. Imagine if they charge extra to remove the badges.
Yeah, that'd be absolutely ridiculous.
Actually, what they
should
do is remove the badges and put them in like a frame or something like that. That'd be quite nice. Frame the GT2 RS.
That's actually quite special. Yeah. I understand that.
Well, maybe. There we go. We have created a business idea for Porsche AG in Germany.
Yeah, okay. That's a good idea.
I think that's not a bad idea. But in my opinion, with my GT2 RS, go full red interior.
That's a bit ambitious, Kirk.
It is ambitious. And ambitious. Then Miami blue. What color are we doing?
I'm currently diving into lava blue with the Weisach package.
I have not put the Weisach package on mine. Okay,
the optional $62,000 extra.
Yep. Now I've ticked over $800,000. Oh dear. Okay. Well, I left that money in my other pants, so I'm going to have to come back to the next podcast and buy that. But instead, well, okay, let's scrap all the plans. We're not just talking about the GT2 RS.
No, we're not. Right. No,
we're not just specking out GT2 RS. I think that's probably not a great idea. Plus, I can't afford it right now.
No. Other pants. Sorry. Other pants.
Yeah, other pants. But instead, we still have our generic cars and driving on our frustrating roads here in good old Australia. And, not everyone's a great driver on the road.
No. There are some pretty frustrating things that happen a lot of the time.
Even though we're not rolling around in the most nice cars, we still drive them like trash, and we come across so many people that struggle to drive cars properly.
Kirk, can I ask you, what's your worst hatred for people on the road? It's like the one pet peeve that just gets you every time.
Like when I say other people driving?
Yeah, like if someone...
Okay.
Interferes with your driving.
We're all left-hand... Actually, no, we're all right-hand drive, but we drive in the left-hand lane in Australia. The single thing I hate the most, the single thing, is when people drive under the speed limit in the right-hand lane on the freeway.
No, that's fair.
So
that's
I'm in the right-hand very lane. Fair. I want to go like 103Ks or 104. I'm overtaking everyone, and I just find some little fucker that's sitting there in the right-hand lane.
Doing 90.
And then I go past, and they give me the biggest look, and I'm like swerving in the back in like the right-hand lane. Some other guy behind me probably thinks I'm nuts. But I'm swerving behind this car, whatever car it is, and it happens all the time. And they just don't let me pass. That is the single thing I hate the most. There are so many times where I rarely flash the lights, but that is the single thing I hate the most.
No, I understand that. That is the worst feeling ever, especially when the guy next to him is doing the same speed and you just can't move around.
Oh, yeah. Like, you literally cannot move. All three lanes are blocked and you're legit going 90 in a 100 zone and you're trying to pass in the right-hand lane.
Oh, I hate that.
I think there should be like a system. In fact, I have heard people that have been pulled over for driving too slow in those lanes, and that serves them right. They deserve it.
Whether or not there's an actual like legal fee,
I think there is a legal thing. Like, if you do drive too slowly, you get a fine. Probably not demerit points, because that doesn't make any sense, but there probably is a fine. And they deserve
reckless driving.
Because if I'm in my car and some guy in like a 10 grand Honda Civic from like 2001 is driving at 80Ks now in the 100 zone, and I'm trying to get somewhere, no offense to Honda Civic drivers, I do like the new ones. I'm gonna pop that out there now.
Yeah, I really do like the new ones.
But is anyone driving in the right hand lane? too slowly. That's the thing I hate the most. Now, Corey, what are we up to? What do we not like? I know there's a few things, but there's probably one thing
that... I hate a lack of indicating. I hate people who don't indicate. I can't stand it. It's like that's one thing. It's like a part of driving. You have accelerating, braking, and indicating.
And indicating.
Oh, and turning.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, and turning. It's not that hard.
I hate people who don't indicate. Like, how hard is it? As your hand flashes past the indicator on its way to turn the corner...
Oh, that is actually so true.
Can you not just move your pinky enough to even just flick it?
Although indicating, yeah, it is kind of like, if you think about it, like, do you really have to indicate? Well, you do, because it's not only safe, it just makes sense. Like, it's not that hard.
At least we have some idea of what's going on in front of us. Yeah. It's dangerous.
What do you think of the people that indicate like once, like they do one tick and they just immediately go into the next lane?
I could blink and I'd still miss it.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, let's indicate and
so
cut
what's,
people
what
off.
Is the most amount of blinks or the least amount of blinks that need to surpass Corey's blink test?
2 seconds. 2 or 3 seconds. It needs to be on for at least a solid 1, 2. And you know, that makes sense.
I think I typically do, my car has a mode where I can change it. Like I do a quick flick. Like I flick the indicator once and then it does like one, it does 3 ticks and then it go, then I can change. So I usually do that twice. So I do like 6 ticks and then like I'm fully into the lane. But sometimes I do just like a couple dash in. I do have to admit, I'm not when in the right-hand lane, this is my pet peeve. In the right-hand lane, if someone's up my ass, I always move over to the next lane.
Which is fair, which is the right thing to do.
I always do it. But sometimes I have to admit, I'm a bit of a culprit with indicating. I do sometimes like a 1 second little indication and I go into the next lane. So, you know, maybe...
If there's no one next to you, as long as you're not cutting people off in the process, that's just driving like a dick.
Although what I do find annoying is that some people, or like police is what I mean by the people, actually book people, book drivers on the road for not indicating... at like 3 a.m. in the morning when there's no one around. What do you think about that? Surely the opinion changes.
At 3 a.m. in the morning. I still indicate. You know what? I struggle to actually turn a corner without indicating because it feels weird.
Actually, that is also true.
I can't. Even if I do it, it just feels like I've done something
wrong.
Yeah,
I guess it kind of feels safer.
It's just another... You never know. To me, it's just another aspect of driving. It's something...
I think it's not that hard to do, so you might as well just do it. But, you know, if you are driving a BMW or a Range Rover...
And if they are Eurospec, we understand.
Yeah, that makes sense. But a lot of them have a tendency to not indicate. They're the biggest culprits.
Oh, in my eyes, anyways. In order to drive a BMW, you must pass the test or have a designated bad license order. Because I have had so many BMW drivers, and I swear, like, they make some nice cars. I'm not going to, like, offend BMWs.
No, we won't go there.
But every now and then, if it's always a car that'll just overtake me or cut me off or do something without indicating or signaling or anything, it'll always be a BMW. I don't understand what it's with this breed and this car. How does that happen?
I don't follow. I think just the stereotype of BMW drivers and Range Rovers, they just don't like to indicate. I think, if I think back... The cars that don't indicate mostly are BMW drivers. I'm sorry. Are you a BMW driver? I've never driven a BMW. And if I do, I probably won't use my indicator. Just because that's
it's part of
like.
The experience. That's part of getting
the
A to
BMW
B.
BMW racing package experience. But I think actually the one time I think indicating is necessary is when, or most necessary, is when you're parking. Because I have people that stop in the middle of the street to do a parallel park and they don't indicate. But yeah.
Oh, that's an aggressive time.
That's
for
the
everyone.
Main thing. But you know, we're in our cars. I've got my Veloster. I use my indicators. Corey has his Rexy and Corey now wants to upgrade his Rexy.
No, I don't.
Because
I'm
the 2018
interested.
New WRX just came out. Well, the Australian pricing as well. Subaru Australia just announced the pricing for its new WRX and STI performance packages with a new edition of the car. Which is called, let me find it. It is called the Subaru WRX STI Spec R. I'm pretty sure that's new. It starts at 57 grand, so still cheaper than the Tesla Model 3 last time. It's got a it's got a fat wang, as per usual.
It's got a huge wang.
Massive wang, which
huge
is just, you know,
wang.
For a wing.
Great wang.
And I think I can't really see what the main differences are at the moment. Actually, there are a few things that I'm reading off of this article at the moment. Interior stuff, new 18-inch alloy wheels. Yeah, that's kind of cool. Heated door mirrors, a new 5.9-inch multifunctional display. Oh yes,
that's actually pretty cool.
I thought your screen was big enough already. No,
mine's certainly the 5.9, but that was just... I thought the base was always...
Maybe the base model. Yes, okay. Yeah. So the base model gets the upgraded screen. Okay, that's fair enough. Because I was about to say, a 4-inch screen is the size of an iPhone. So, like an iPhone 4.
Actually, this is interesting. Where it says here that the dusk-sensing headlamps, rain-sensing wipers, all of those things which were exclusive to what my model was, now become standard on the base.
Right. So the 2018 main model of the WRX is basically just upgrades, like bringing premium features to the base model car.
And apart from the fact that the arse on it looks exactly the same as this generation.
Are they all the same? I'm pretty sure they are. Like the body kit wise, there's a few differences.
Oh, the front. The front is very similar, but somewhat different. It's almost got fake GT2.
It actually that's
it's a wannabe GT2 on the STI.
Quite common. Also the Cayman GT4, which is also a very nice car of mine. Oh, not a car of mine. A car that I really like. Has these massive grills at the front, and a lot of car manufacturers are doing them as well on the left hand, right hand side of the car, the front. I do get
those huge rectangular style grills.
Hang on. Okay, so does it have any spec upgrades? So the WRX continues to be powered by a 197 kilowatt, which is just over 400 horsepower? No way.
260.
Yeah, 260 horsepower. Okay, my math is not good. 260 horsepower. So it's 2-liter flat 4 boxer,
which
engine
is exactly the same. Both engines are exactly the same.
And the STI has a 2.5-liter flat 4 with a 6-speed manual option as well. Which is nice.
No, exclusively.
Oh, only.
STIs are only ever in manual.
Right. Okay, I didn't realize that. Well, you know more about Subarus than me. Would you be upset about this, Corey, considering you're the WRX
No, because
owner
there's
here?
Nothing astonishingly different here. There's nothing that puts me in the want for change. It's exactly the same, apart from a little redesign on the front.
Yeah. Did they redesign the 2017 car as opposed to the 2016? Like, did they?
No, 2016, 2015... 2017. We're all very much the same. From 2014.
Because I know
14 or 15.
Because I know the Veloster did a big jump from 2014, not outside but inside wise. Did a massive jump from 2014 to 2015. But cars don't seem to have massive cycles. Like, you know, your iPhone, whatever. I keep using this example, but it has a 2-year upgrade cycle where there's big design changes. But with cars, I don't really know what the big revamp cycle is. Whether it's 5 years, 6 years. I guess
new model, updated model?
Yeah, I don't know.
Hey, some cars are different. Some have very significant features about them. Some hold a similar look for so long. I mean, you can speak of companies like Porsche, which are renowned for their styling.
Yeah, like they
always, which
is work
for them, and that's
the styling,
that's significant. Yeah. They don't change that.
I guess there's always I remember the 911s back in 2000. They had big issues, sale problems as well. They introduced the Cayenne. After they introduced the Cayenne, they revamped the 911, I think, around 2010. And that's when it started getting good again. And that's I forgot the year. But that's when they renowned and started getting a lot better and the big upgrades. So I guess cars do have their upgrade cycle. Cars definitely have their upgrade cycle. But long story short, Corey's not buying the new WRX.
Nope.
Even, are you sure you don't want those heated mirrors?
No, I really don't.
Heated windscreen wipers?
I don't want them.
Do you have heated seats? Actually, this doesn't come with heated seats.
No, it doesn't.
Nor does my car, so our asses will continue to be cold. Now, and all new 2018 WRX owners.
I'm going to move this on. I'm going to go from one JDM icon to another. Now, for those who do not understand what JDM actually stands for, I'll inform you. Japanese domestic market, which I think it's just stuck. It was something.
Thank you for the lesson, Corey. I did not know what JDM was.
Well, now we're learning. Now we're moving. But going into what I wanted to speak about, Nissan GT-Rs have just come up on my radar again. They're now 8 years old since they were released.
They are 8 years old.
And they're aging quite fast. But it's not that they're really changing either, but their performance is becoming even more astonishing. They are still renowned for being one of the quickest cars.
You can buy a GTR 2012, something like that, with a fantastic interior still. Interiors do wear over time. For 130 grand Australian and do 0 to 60 in under 3 seconds.
You can compete with a Turbo S.
Yeah.
Worth 500 grand for a car sub 150.
Sub 150. That's incredible. Yes, you can buy a new GTR for 250, whatever, the new one, especially the 2017 one. In fact, I was watching a Chris Harris Top Gear video. He reviewed a orange Nissan GTR.
I think he called it a copper.
Yeah, a copper.
A copper. Yeah, a copper GTR. Distinctly copper. It was copper. Not,
I didn't like the color, but you'll be easily be able to find it if you just do a quick search on YouTubes. And it was actually a very... He complimented the car. There was nothing really bad about it. It's an all-wheel drive system. Please correct me if I'm wrong.
No, you're correct.
Under 3 seconds. Design hasn't really changed in the past 8 years. There's a few little few tweaks, but the Nissan GTR, like, it is... It is the go. When anyone thinks of a car, a cheap car that does under 3 seconds, you always go for the GTR.
It's incredible. I'm surprised that they're still holding this market and they're selling as many cars as they are. Everything seems to be growing, but no one seems to understand that Nissan is just pumping these out because they are such great value.
Oh, they're amazing value. And the only thing, if you're paying 130 grand for a Nissan GTR, I reckon it still would cop a few looks on the street as well.
Oh, like, I still highly respect the GTRs. If I see one, that's still, in my head, that's still a special supercar. That's a
very
pretty...
special supercar. I think, for that amount of money, you could also buy, I mean, Marcel's on the last show, you could buy an F-Type for that amount of money, especially like an older GTR. A regular F-Type, six-cylinder F-Type for 130 grand. And I much prefer to get a GTR over an F-Type. What do you think about that? I'd have a
GTR anytime. Yeah. I feel like that's an incredible, like, track-worthy vehicle.
Because like this,
and daily.
This is also another car that you can take straight from home, drive on the roads. Although I haven't taken a GTR on the track, you can go straight from the road to the track and then drive it home, if you know what I mean, and then go for a coffee later on. Like, you don't need to do massive setups, don't need to get extra fire extinguishers, Lamborghini, Ferrari, you don't need to get any of those things, and you can just pop it right on the track, and this thing will actually flog it on the track as well. Compared to a Nissan GTR in Nismo edition, which starts at $300,000,
but they are
incredible to look at. But what do you actually get for an extra 300 grand? Someone please.
A lot of carbon.
You get a lot of carbon.
A lot of carbon.
So you get less car because the carbon's lighter. So you get less car. You get some red stripes. I assume the 0 to 60 time is probably the same. What is the same?
Same engine.
But I reckon after 0 to 60, it probably gets a lot.
I think
quicker.
It's a slightly more tweaked version. Maybe an extra
I'm sure
10 to
over 100 k's
10 to 15 kilowatts.
I'm sure over 100 k's an hour probably pulls a lot harder. But The price discrepancy for a GTR Nismo edition is just so much.
Oh, it's absolutely astonishing. But is it really worth it? I don't think it's worth that much more.
I'm going on to our local Australian car shopping site right now. And I'm going to find, it's called Car Sales. And I'm trying to find a GTR and see what, there's 66 cars available in Australia. So the cheapest one, a 2009 GTR. Actually, let's find the cheapest one right now. And you can guess what the price it is, Corey. Okay, so...
I reckon 110.
Okay, so there is a GTR 2009 that's on 130,000 Ks, and there's a 2009 GTR that's on 55,000 Ks. What's your guess?
110?
110 grand. You can buy a 2009 GTR that does 0 to 60, just for the streets, you're not putting it on the track, 0 to 60 in 3 seconds for 70 grand.
Wow.
70 grand. It's done a lot of Ks on it. It would need a little bit of fixing.
Japanese car. That thing will last.
I think, and like, also like the screen, like it's got a full entertainment system and everything. I wouldn't go for that 2009 one that's on 130,000 Ks. There's this silver one here. I'm going to pop this link so you can have a look at it as well. It's this nice silver one. Obviously you can't really see what it looks like on the podcast, but the point is that they still look nice. They still look beautiful, very beautiful.
Well, they haven't changed.
They haven't changed much. They really haven't changed much, the GTRs. I'm not sure whether... Would you still buy one? I reckon I would for that amount of cash. But yeah, I'm not too sure about it.
Just having a look, I mean, 55,000 Ks. It's the same six-cylinder, 3.8 litre, twin turbo.
And also 55,000 Ks in... well, that's 8 years' time. That's the first
actually,
GTR.
Just
want to
mention, looking at this, it's not a standard GTR. This is definitely tuned. Catless downpipes, catless midpipes. This thing would be loud.
It would be very loud. Jesus.
It's got a... He's done a custom tune. Yeah. He's got 500 at the wheels in horsepower.
Corey and I, once again, at the car wheels. Shopping. And we for are. How much does this thing cost again?
He wants $83,990.
$83,000, and this thing looks absolutely nuts. again, I'd love to see this on the streets, and I'd love to take off with it. This one doesn't have a 0-60 term. I know we keep saying 0-60, but the pure reason why I keep saying that is because you can't take the cars. If you're not putting on the track, you can't take it above 100 on the roads. There's no autobahn in Australia.
That's
apart. Well, you can go into the country and take it to 130, but who's going to do that? So, you know, what do you expect?
Oh, man.
What do you expect? But yeah, you know, that's our little GTR fantasy. Would you spend would you spend the extra 60 grand or have much the,
Nismo?
Not for the Nismo to buy a new GTR now rather than an older one. Would you spend that extra cash?
Well, he wants 83,990. I believe they started 170.
Okay. So an extra 100 grand, sorry. New.
Sub 90 grand.
Yeah.
Extra 90 grand. Would I?
For a new one?
Probably yes.
Mm-hmm. I probably would as well.
Just to stay up to date, an engine completely untouched, unmodified. Yeah.
They are nice looking cars. They are very nice looking cars. I think I'd get one. I would get one. But, you know, I don't know what the manufacturing type of, the errors, if you know what I mean, but like the servicing costs. I don't know what they're like. You also have to factor those in. But cars that have come out recently, the GTR, the new one has just come out. The one that we talked about last episode, we spent a lot of time talking about the Mercedes X-Class U, and finally, it came out. They released it. The official specs have been revealed. It is a $60,000 car.
Which is priced awesome.
It is fantastic. It's called the X350D. That's what it's called.
Sounds like a BMW.
It actually
kind of
sounds like a BMW.
It sounds exactly like a BMW.
But it has a 3-liter V6 turbo diesel engine. Its maximum towing capacity is 3,500, which is more than a Toyota Hilux and a Volkswagen Amarok. Just to put that out there.
All turbo diesels.
And it's not like luxurious on the inside or anything like that. It's, you know, standard U-type stuff on the inside. And it's priced well in the range of a Toyota Hilux and a Ford Ranger, between 55 grand and 62 grand base price. The Amarok is a little bit more expensive at 68. So I think this Mercedes is very, very competitive at this price.
It's greater tow capacity than the Amarok I've got to put in. It's greater ground clearance, much more torque. A little bit, maybe 50 more horsepower. I think it's awesome.
And I think the main thing is it's a Mercedes.
It's a Mercedes. Like it's a Merc.
Like if you want to get like a nice working class vehicle, you don't need to spend like $200,000 on a Mercedes U, which is what we were thinking. Like, we're thinking, is it going to be a luxury car?
Oh, I was worried. I was worried they were going to make some sort of luxury thing out of it, and they wouldn't sell. They would not move any units if that was the case.
It is actually a very nice looking car as well. I would definitely get one over. I'd get one over a Toyota Hilux. I guess probably over a Ford Ranger as well. It'd be up in the air compared to a Volkswagen Amarok and the X350D. But then again, it has a lot more power. Kilowatts wise compared to the Amarok, which is actually awesome.
Maybe a little bit more fun, a little bit more pulling.
Ability. Yeah, I think it would be a very nice comparison. I reckon it would be interesting to drive the two of them, but I think it also comes down to personal preference with utes as well.
Could you drive a Mercedes ute and be happy about it? Like, wouldn't you? I don't know. I feel like there's a certain level of judgment there. That's a because they have such a branded name.
Yeah, there might be a little bit of a stigma. I don't know. Like,
what's attached to that vehicle? Are they meant to be, is it meant to sit alongside a Mercedes, or is this just a whole new approach?
Actually, I'm reading now. That does make a good point because they are considered luxury cars. But the funny thing is that apparently there'll be three very different models. So the one we're talking about right now is the base model,
which is to compete with.
That still has a lot more power than the other ones. I'm trying to figure out what the other names of the models are, which I can't figure out right now. Okay, they haven't released the other one. There says, I'm legit going to read an article here. Mercedes says this model, the second model, will be suited to a more urban environment, which also is aiming at buyers interested in sport and off-road use.
What does that mean? A more urban environment?
I don't know.
Are you talking a smaller engine, maybe more fuel economic? Like,
yeah, probably. It might have it might dial down the power and stuff like that.
For those unaware, it's currently a 3-liter, 6-cylinder turbo diesel.
Yeah.
I do not know what their intentions are with a more urban-based car and more sporty. Are we talking?
I think it's probably going to dial up a little bit of the power, but also have a bit more of a luxurious inside. But then again, who's going to go like to a wedding or something like that, or a function in a ute? I guess you can chuck all the people out in the back and lock them there, but you know, I wouldn't be rolling up in a ute to a fancy occasion.
No, I wouldn't either. Yeah.
Unless more urban environments, more targeting towards people that are, you know, doing construction work inside the, like, the city and stuff rather than out in the country. So I think once the Ute comes to Australia, there'll be lots of people that are driving it. Plenty of people that are driving it. Getting to look at, you know, how it drives and everything. But it's going to be interesting to see what the whole reaction is towards it.
Yeah, I'm more curious about the stigma more than anything else. What's going to be attached to this car? How they're going to treat it as a Mercedes that it is?
Yeah,
I'm curious.
I think the one thing also that you're going to be disappointed about, that you wanted to hear.
No
about,
AMG spec.
No AMG spec, but even worse, it will not come in a V8. Even the top spec.
Sadly,
models.
That's what I was hoping. I was hoping that.
So no AMG,
like,
and no V8.
Even like the high range, if they're more luxurious attempt or maybe their more sporty version might even have some sort of special AMG V8 in it.
It's incredible engines. It's just not good.
What a waste of potential.
Yeah, it's not going to, like, probably next year or even the year after might pop that out there, but it's just not going to have a V8. That's what has been said so far. Unless Mercedes is going to come out with some like secret whatever and pop out a V8 in there or something like that.
I'm partially praying they do. Yeah. I'm staying hopeful for the sake of maybe
like
a future endeavor.
That's when it could compare. Like, people buy like RS7s, KNs and everything. Those come out in V8s as their workhorse cars.
Yeah.
But, you know, because like, not like people that buy these type of cars don't want to buy something like a Toyota Hilux because like it's considered cheap, if you know what I mean. I'm not one of those people, obviously. But I guess this Mercedes, if they bring it out with a bit more of a tougher engine, put two more cylinders in there, it might appeal to more of a crowd, but it's going to be interesting. It's a nice looking car. It's a very nice looking car.
I'm impressed.
It should be interesting. I hope it's very much interesting. But this is going to be a big waiting game, a very big waiting game. But you know, Porsche do make their Cayenne at the moment. That is their main. You know, that in fact that's also what saved Porsche as well. But you know, Porsche are really getting up there at the moment with everything. It's like the past 5 years, I think Porsche have really upped the ante and dialed everything to 11. And you definitely have a say on this as well. With all their new cars, they got such a massive line and they're really dominating.
Porsche was lying pretty dormant for quite a while, actually. Not dormant, they were still producing vehicles. They weren't moving as much in units. But kind
like
of, 20, yeah.
2000, over, 2010.
Yeah, yeah, over the last couple of years, though, in their Cayennes and Macans, their SUV range, moving into their sportier range, their Turbo S's, their Turbos, those cars have come such a ridiculously long way in such a short amount of time. And they are performing at the absolute peak of anything at the moment.
They are. Porsche just released their sales for this year or last year, the 2016 to 2017 year. And they had the record sales of the year for all of Porsche manufacturing kind of, manufacturing time period. They've released so many new cars, like the 911 GTS has just come out. The new Turbo S has also just come out as well. And although those cars sometimes cost as much as a one-bedroom unit, and they're definitely not spare change, they're probably a little bit less than a GT2 RS as well. The Turbo S's, we'll get into that a little bit. But they are absolutely dominating. I did read somewhere that they have one of the highest profit margins per car. Like upwards,
really?
Upwards of 30 grand. This is not Boxsters, but more like the 911s. Around 30 grand per car just because in the Porsche manufacturing in Germany, they have only one production line. Every single car goes to one production line. Every single car.
It's incredible.
I do know that for sure for all of their sports cars. I'm tempted to use the word sedan and coupes. But I'm not sure whether that includes the Cayennes, Macans, and Panameras. But I know for all the 911s, they have one production line. So their profit margins are just insane. And they are killing it. They really are.
I'm just looking at the... I'm reading about the Turbo S and the Turbo itself. Power. I mean, we mentioned it earlier compared against a GTR. That's a 3.8-litre. That's a twin-turbo six-cylinder. That's something like...
Who needs a V8? Who needs a V10? Who needs a V12? And who needs a W16?
That's almost 600 horsepower in a Porsche.
Yeah, when you can have a V6 car that does 0 to 60 in 2.6 seconds, and that is just also the manufacturer's or Porsche's official time. It's done quicker than that.
It's done far quicker than that, yeah.
It's definitely done quicker than that. But it is like... they are killing it. They really are. Let's just go through the kind of Porsche's lineup at the moment. Everything that they're producing.
Well, we got to speak about the new ones that were a bit slightly distraught about with the new Caymans and the Boxsters.
Oh,
with
yes. Their four that cylinder is actually the teardown. One thing I'm
That's
not...
a really huge setback. Yeah. Not setback.
They have to do it. They just have genuinely to do it. Have to do
that's
it.
Everyone's that's where the market's going. Way.
For example, what we're talking about now is that all the new 718s, the Boxers and the Caymans, including the GTS, they have the same specs, but instead of having a V6 naturally aspirated car, they have dialed it down to a V4, four cylinders only, turbocharged cars.
Purely Boxer engines.
It's just like has these new Porsches, Caymans and Boxers have the same amount of cylinders as my car,
as your car, as my car, yep. as Mercedes A45s,
yep.
as all those sporty hatches, and everything comes together,
yep. purely because of emissions. So which is why if you have a Cayman GT4 or any type of Boxster or Cayman pre 2015, including 2015, keep them because they
not get rid of them. They
might
may
be
appreciate.
On the verge of appreciation.
The most appreciation by not only car lovers but financial institutions. They are going to stick around for quite some time.
They're the last six cylinder Boxers and Caymans. I know, yes, Boxers and Caymans aren't the most renowned Porsches in the world, but they're the cheapest way, entry level way to get into the Porsche lineup. Which, by the way, Porsche do sell a lot of them.
Huge numbers.
Probably not as much. Definitely not as much as a Cayenne or Macan, because you can't daily a box. You can't really daily those cars if you need lots of stuff in the boot. Blah blah blah. But but again, this is the only thing that is just disappointing. They have to do it. It's a financial decision. It's a economical decision they have to do, and that's put four cylinders in their engines for these new cars. Will they bring four cylinders to the 911s? I hope not. I definitely hope not.
I don't think they will. That's too much of a significant range for them. No.
Unless, I guess, because, you know, the French government are bringing in those new laws. And I guess if they do bring in new laws across the world, they might have to. But for the moment, we're going to enjoy our six-cylinder cars. Our six-cylinder Porsches.
That sound way better.
Yeah.
You'll never get that same sound.
And also, yeah, that's also the main thing. Like, the new Caymans have lost their sound. That is one of the biggest things and the biggest complaints out there. But with these new Caymans, which is a little bit sad. But we're talking about Porsches. Let it continue.
I want to speak about a crossbreeding.
Yes.
What Porsche's been doing with their spare time. Looking at the
And also your spare time.
Well, my spare time.
And your spare time.
Looking at the Turbo S and where it's come and comparing it against a 918 hypercar and almost breeding the
they
two
had a
together.
Baby. Corey popped them in the room. He put the two cars in
I
the room.
I left on the music. I turned off the lights. I laid out a mattress and suddenly I had a GT2 RS the next day.
That is legit what I think the new GT2 RS is. It is a love child between the 918, the technology of the 918, and the Turbo S, the performance as well.
Well, in terms of a combustion engine, that's just hauling ass.
Exactly. Because I guess the 918 has a much better performance than the Turbo S, but the Turbo S does not have the electric motor as well.
That's no, it doesn't. It certainly doesn't.
It's not considered a hypercar. But basically, the Turbo S and the 918 got together, made this GT2 RS baby,
which is still a 911 Turbo S twin turbo six cylinder.
Yep. I don't remember. Is the GT2 RS naturally aspirated or not?
No, twin turbo.
It is twin turbo. Oh, right. Okay. It is twin turbo.
Definitely twin turbo.
It is definitely twin turbo. But yeah, they made a baby and it is a very expensive baby. at $700,000
at $1,000 per horsepower. Put it like that.
Yep. In Australia, the massive luxury car tax and everything bringing here, it is ridiculous. It is
incredible amount of money for a car. That's not even, well, as far as we know, on a limited spec.
Okay, let's play a game. My car costs $35,000. How many Velocitas can you get for $700,000? You can get, let me just pop this in. You can get 20 Velocitas. So I'm going to get three, red, white, and blue. In fact, I can get 20 Velocitas and I can have one per week or one per day. For 20 days. And then, and I have a massive garage.
Well, the way you drive your clutch, you're going to need one, man.
I am going to need a new one soon. My clutch is breaking. It is, yep.
So you can smell it, believe me.
Yeah, so even though Porsche are bringing out these massive, like, monster cars and they're just dominating the market, they are still absolutely destroying the financial game. They're wrecking everyone. I guess Ferrari actually do have a high profit margin per car, but that's because they probably pop in all of their other finances in there.
This is after they won back the odometers and they calculate their depreciation. It's and
like they put in their merchandise sales as part of their net profit margin for each of their cars.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true.
We made $50,000 per car, but we also sold 20,000 teddy bears with it.
30,000 hats.
And 30,000 hats.
One or two fake pedal Ferraris. And
this is our net profit margin. Yes, I think that's a reasonable assumption. We can't really make that. But yeah, once again, Porsche dominating. And time for Corey to pick headlines. Again, you only got 5 minutes and you have to pick a few headlines. I've only got two today, so the news hasn't been that great. Sadly. I've only got two headlines for you.
That's okay.
Or two comparisons. But this is going to be fun. All right, so you have 5 minutes left. You can only read one of these headlines, Corey. So the first one is... the five best manual transmission cars you can buy right now. This is also on a budget. Compared to Volkswagen's new family plans for all R-spec models. So this includes Golf R.
No.
Scirocco R.
No.
All that.
I don't want to know. I'd like to know the five best manuals.
So he's going to pick the five best manuals. So, all right. So you click on this article and this is what's rated as the five best manual cars you can buy right now. Funny enough, the first one, the best manual car you can buy within a budget right now, is a Porsche 718 Cayman and a Boxster.
That would be...
there we go.
That sounds about right.
There we go. That sounds about right to me. After that is the Mazda MX-5. This is all within budget, by the way. The Mazda MX-5.
Wow.
After that, we have the Golf GTI.
Not surprised.
So not the R. After that, we have the Honda Civic Type R. There we go. I knew the Civic was coming back.
Yeah,
but
the Type R is pretty astonishing. Yeah.
And then we have something called the Caterham 7, which is...
the Caterham's a track toy.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a little sports buggy.
Yeah, so there we go. There's a couple of manual cars that you can buy instead of clicking on the new R-Line upgraded.
In saying that, it's a pretty absurd budget starting at Porsche.
Yeah, that is true.
They're not exactly appealing to
Yeah, so that was the top of the line. But, you know, obviously they have a good track record of having a manual gearbox. In fact, we're going back to Porsche again, but the best, they have a fantastic manual gearbox, I hear, with the Cayman GT4. It basically has a six-cylinder 911 engine in there in the Cayman body factor, and apparently that gearbox is mental. I'd love to have a drive in it one day. I'd love to. But all right, so our next article, both of these articles are based off the Nürburgring.
The Nürburgring.
Yes, the Nürburgring.
The hamburger ring.
The hamburger ring. The hamburger ring. The onion rings. Okay, so you have to pick one of them again, both based off the track. Okay, so the first article is 2018 Renault Megane RS attacks the Nürburgring.
Of course you would pick that article. Yeah. You of all people.
Yeah, and again, the next article here is behind the scenes of McLaren P1's Nürburgring lap record.
Well, what obviously the P1.
I know you're going to pick that. I knew you're going to pick that. But I have to admit, I do want to see what this new Megane RS is like.
So we're going to open it anyway.
So we're opening it anyway. There's really just picture spy shots of the new car. In fact, what they are doing with Megane RS is now going from two doors, like coupe, to four doors.
Turning it more into a sedan type style, it's still a hatch, correct?
Yes, it is still a hatch. But it is literally the ugliest thing I've seen. I'll pop that link. You can have a look at it now.
Thank you.
But it actually looks so bad. They're changing it from two doors to two front doors to four doors, unfortunately, which is just annoying. Again, I did prefer the other ones, or like the two-door versions. But behind the scenes of the P1 thing, that looks like a good article. And the article also includes two videos. There you go. They did six-minute 43.2-second lap time around the Nürburgring, which is very, very quick.
Whoa!
It is absolutely nuts. But yeah, it is, yeah. So
that's incredible.
Good pick. Talking about McLaren, though.
Can I lead this one?
You can go.
Just while we're going, where the fuck did McLaren come from?
I don't know. They came from Britain, I'm pretty sure.
They came from Britain. Obviously their tea got cold and they just decided to go nuts.
Because I was reminiscing epic cars.
Well, they really are. They used to be huge in the Formula One game. We know that. That's where it all started.
They did too.
That was their racing pedigree. And for years between the 90s and the 2000s, apart from the F1 itself, the McLaren F1, which we all know and love.
Oh, yeah.
The
expense of the
big was one. Nothing. There was absolutely nothing that really came out of there in terms of a production vehicle. since 2011, we were given birth of the McLaren 12C,
mm-hmm.
in which became one of the biggest competitors to what we knew as the 458.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
Ferrari, yes.
That's where we really saw it start to actually form. But apart from that, McLaren just came out of nowhere.
Like, I guess they did start back in the 90s, or 1991, 92. They had the F1. Now, that is a very rare and high-maintenance cost car, the F1, I know.
If you have a few million, you do not fear.
Yeah, you need a lot of... It cost even $100,000 a year just to maintain that thing, something ridiculous like that, even if you just sit it in your garage. So that thing is expensive. After that, Mercedes did the SLR with McLaren. That was in 2004, 2003. That doesn't really count, though, as a McLaren-based car.
More of a mad collaboration with Mercedes.
Yeah, which is cool. Which is cool to see. After that, they went with the 12C, as you mentioned. Then the P1. And then after the P1, I know we're going through this quickly, but then they started pumping out all these massive cars. Like, you know, the 675 LT, the 650S, and recently the 720S, which is... creating headlines everywhere.
Even their lower range cars, like their 540Cs, 570Ss, and the 570GTs, which were incredibly attractive cars.
Oh, yeah.
And pack such a huge amount of punch.
And, it's like, for example, the 570S costs similar, a little bit more than, like, 911s, for example, and they just look so much better. Like, they do attract eyes on the road, those McLarens, which is...
Oh,
like,
regardless of what McLaren it is, for something, I feel like... For I think they're a $300,000 to $350,000 car here for us. A 7-speed dual clutch. I think they're about 560 brake horsepower.
Yeah.
Which compares us back to the Nissan GTR, which is exactly the same, 561.
It is a lot slower than the GTR horsepower. In a straight line.
A lot
line.
Slower.
Yeah. But then again, I think a McLaren does turn more heads than GTR.
It certainly turns a lot more banknotes as well.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like, you're going to have to bring in a couple extra $100 bills in order to buy one of these cars, any one of them. But do you remember how much the 720S does cost to purchase here in Australia? I can't
no,
remember.
I read it a while ago, but it was obviously... I believe it was sub...
Is it in
GT2 RS
territory or...?
Almost 1,000 per horsepower again, but a little bit more this time.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure it was 800,000 here.
Wow.
I can't remember.
I'd like, honestly, there, I'd much prefer to get a 675 LT just because it looks a lot better. $800,000 for the 720S. I don't know about that. I don't know. It is a nice looking car. Don't get me wrong. It's a nice looking car,
in
but
saying
I think
that,
I prefer the
675. The 675 in my eyes will probably hold a little bit more value. I mean,
yeah, it will.
That's a limited spec. The 720S. Was there a certain number from what they were releasing for the 720S?
How many production units?
Yeah.
I don't think it was limited production at all. Although they obviously can't produce, they can only produce as many as their production line can hold, if you know what I mean. But I don't think it was limited, like the R, for example, or anything like that, or their 675 LT. I think it was mass produced, just like the GT2 RS. I'm pretty sure it's in the same boat as that. I still look back at that as a good comparison.
I'm just going to jump back in again. I was so off. I just remembered the 720S was no more than $500,000. Because
right.
It was a budget. It was almost a budget supercar to compete with the 488 GTB
right,
from
Ferrari.
I was
about to say, at $800,000.
Yeah, no, I completely switched that up. I was thinking of something else.
I probably should have just searched 720S.
You probably should have. It only just hit me.
Okay, so priced from $490,000. Wow. Okay. For a car that is just, that's quicker than a 675 LT around the track. That's a much
better
option.
4-liter twin turbocharged V8.
Yeah.
That's 530 kilowatts.
The pump-ups
will be 700
insane.
Horsepower.
Yeah.
I just want to read that. I've got some numbers here I wanted to share. 0 to 100 in 2.9 seconds.
Mm-hmm. So almost as quick as a turbo.
Where it gets you, it's 0 to 200 kilometers an hour in 7.8 seconds.
Yeah. That is absolutely insane. 7.8 seconds. 0 to 200 Ks an hour. Yeah, not miles per hour, obviously.
That is incredible.
It is a lot quicker because I've seen some drag races and the 720S absolutely takes off after that mark compared to the 675.
So what's with these companies now and this concept of turbo lag that used to be so big with these cars? Are they just mastering the art of instant talk? Where is this power coming from?
I think they are. Like, when started starting now, how, like, for example, I'm going back to the Caymans and the Boxsters.
Oh, you're such a Porsche fanboy. No, I understand. I understand.
Because you'll hear what I'm saying. Because car manufacturers are now getting more used to making turbo, turbo, not initiated cars, but more dependent cars, more turbo-dependent cars. They're getting a lot better at utilizing the turbo feature of a car. And they're just getting a lot better at minimizing that turbo lag, which is why I use the Porsche again as an example, but I'm pretty sure whenever car manufacturers get better at using something, the cars just get better. So I think that's probably your main reason why. It is the main reason why. Is the more you get used to something, the better it gets.
Sharing this ad here while we're talking about all that. For you guys more based in the US, I believe a quarter mile is probably more of a measure of time for you. About 400 meters for us.
Half a kilometer.
It's a pretty world-renowned statement to have a certain quarter mile time. Mm-hmm. And the 720S is claimed to be just over 10.3 seconds. In a quarter mile. That's very fast.
400 meters in 10.5 seconds. Think of it this way. Usain Bolt runs 100 meters in 10 seconds. Think of it like that.
Usain Bolt.
Yeah, I know. I'm comparing man to car. But, you know, he does four times that speed in the same amount of time. That is quick. You have 400 meters per second at 10 seconds. How many meters is he doing per second? He's doing around 40 meters every second. 40 meters every second.
When you put it like that, I believe that the 720S is 0 to 100 in just 29.2 meters.
Yeah.
Wow. 0 to 100 kilometers an hour in less than 30 meters.
It is crazy. That is absolutely crazy. This car, at 800,000, I got a little bit surprised, I have to admit. I was like,
yeah, no, I even shocked myself. I didn't know where that came from.
But 500,000, that is a very, very nice looking get. But, you know, I haven't seen one on the road yet. I've only seen one parked. I haven't seen one driving or on a racetrack. So one day, that day will come. And I'm sure it will look beautiful when I see it.
Why so well priced?
I think that's just, I don't know.
Did McLaren settle down? Did they get off a high horse? Did they have their high with the 675 and the 650? What happened?
Then again, still you can buy a lot more cars for 500 grand. Like, then again, the Turbo S is quicker than the 720S as well. At the same price.
Yep.
If you think about it.
Yep.
But would I say it's still well priced? I think so. If you're comparing it to this LT, which is exactly double or around about double, it is a good thing to think about. But, you know, they are nice looking cars. But, you know, also Ferrari do make nice looking cars now, don't they, Corey?
They did, and I have a certain style about them. But now we're moving into something a little bit more interesting.
Yes.
Something a little bit more strange.
458, lovely car. F40. Amazing car. 488, beautiful. LaFerrari, beautiful. But now, Ferrari are introducing an FUV. What the fuck is an FUV?
Fucking utility vehicle.
This is news to my ears, by the way. I have no idea what on earth you're going on about here, Corey. But I'm reading here that Ferrari wants to introduce an FUV.
Well, everyone's doing it, so why not just do it as well? Why not just...
Explain. What does FUV stand for?
It's a Ferrari utility vehicle. It's not which SUV. It's not even an SUV. It's a Ferrari SUV. They're just another car manufacturer to jump into the SUV bandwagon. Porsche's already done it with the Cayenne. Bentley's done it. Maserati's done it. Lamborghini. Everyone is doing it right now.
The Lamborghini Urus.
The Urus.
And now we have the Ferrari FUV. These Italians, I'm not sure what's happening here, but obviously they want to compete. They want to compete. So, you know, hang on. What else do we have here? I want to click on this link. And see what other competitors will be competing against this FUV. We have the Lamborghini Urus. The Aston Martin DBX, I believe it's called. They want to bring
which is still. I think that's still a concept. That DBX no, isn't it's in production not real. Okay. As of yet.
Yeah.
No, it's real. It's just not. Yeah. Production.
There's a comment here on one of these forums, and it is saying an SUV, which is supposed to be, I'm doing air quotes here, an off-road vehicle. Who would take £145,000, which is $300,000 Australian dollars, off road? I don't know.
You'd have to be stupid. It's like who would put a $500,000-$600,000 car on a track if you're not even a collector? But who can afford to do that?
Yeah. I don't know. Like, I'd much prefer to buy like an old Jeep Cherokee and pop that, or like one of those those open air cars, if you know what I mean. Those old Jeeps those off-road. Yep. But yeah, what we're trying to get to here is Ferrari want to introduce a FUV, non-SUV.
Can I read a quote from...
Go for it.
I'm gonna try and say his name.
Corey's quote
from Sergio Maceroni.
With a terrible Italian accent.
Maceroni. Is the head of Ferrari.
Mm-hmm.
There's a quote here.
Hang on. Will we get copyright striked for using this Ferrari quote? And will we have to pay merchandise fees that will go towards the Ferrari profits?
Let's not worry. to the net profit margin for the for the next
like
financial year.
Like in accounting reports, quote copyright strikes.
Yeah, an extra right, extra.
Go for it. What's
grand.
His quote?
You have to shoot me first.
Okay.
That was a quote from the Ferrari chairman.
Is he still the Ferrari chairman? I don't know.
Is he still alive?
Is he still alive?
Why? They really don't want to do this.
So have they shot him first or are they actually building an FUV?
Yeah, no, this is... wow, are they actually going to go through with it? Because, like, that's not their ball game. Mm. It's just, it's a new crowd. It's everyone's being pressured by opposing companies now to build these cars that are almost out of their league. It's like no car manufacturers have really stepped out to be different. It's all a follow the leader sort of game.
I know.
Is this FUV really what they want? Really what they need? Will that... Like I said, with the stigma, with the X-Class, is this the sort of stigma they want to bring into Ferrari?
Yeah.
I mean, that's a pretty prestigious brand.
Is the F12 a competitor to a Panamera, like a Panamera? And what other cars compete with a Panamera as well? I can't think off the top of my head.
Panamera. What a Panamera? What, a turbo or standard Panamera?
Oh, standard, like that body shape and everything like that. The sedans. They're not quite sedans, but they are sedans. Anyway,
that's a hard one. I'm just trying to think of.
Yeah, I know the F12 is it's not your typical Ferrari. That's to say, like they brought those new ones out, but I guess you know they want to branch out to new things. They're following the leader, and the leader currently is Porsche, in my opinion. I rest my case.
there's an unhealthy obsession here.
Yeah. Well, it's time. This is it, Corey. We're gonna play another game. Again? And this game involves me giving you a little bit of money. Are you ready to spend some money?
Give me some money.
Okay. So what do you have to do right now? You have to go onto Car Sales, yep. Australia's local home shopping network.
Yep. For car sales. Yep.
You have to go to for Car Sales. This is similar to our first game, but what this game involves is that I'm giving you $100,000, and then you need to buy three cars. You need to buy a sedan or a hatch, one of those two. You need to buy an SUV because you need a tow, and you need to buy something unpredictable. Not a track focused car, but something that looks a little bit, you know, might turn a few heads for $100,000 only. And you have to consider buying used cars as well.
Don't make me do that.
Yeah, I'm going to make you do that. You only have $100,000, Corey. You need to buy three cars. You need something for towing, something to kind of use daily as well. I know we did daily last time, but something to use daily and you have that budget and you need that special car. You have $100,000. Where's he going? So what I'm going to do right now...
This is tough.
What I'm doing right now is I'm going to go onto the website and I type in SUV and my budget for my SUV is going to be $40,000.
Wow, that's a big budget for an SUV.
Actually, okay, maybe it won't be that much.
No, but okay. What else will you get for such...
Actually,
oh, no, that's a lie. I know exactly what you could get.
Actually, I'm going to buy a Haval H2. What even is this for $24,000? I don't even know. So this is going to be tough, Corey. This is going to be tough. I know. Not all of my games are easy.
It's not enough.
This is level 5.
It's not enough. You need okay. Well, going off what I can see before I go into every single car ever,
I'll make this a little easier for you.
Okay.
Do you want me to make it easier for you?
Please.
Okay. $100,000, you have to buy a sporty car and a daily car.
Oh, so we're splitting it in two. Okay.
Okay.
I can do that.
Easy? Cool, because I think I know what I have already.
Why can't sporty be daily?
I guess, yeah, sporty can be daily. Sporty can be daily.
Sporty can be daily.
Maybe you should do it. Maybe I should do it a little bit better. Not, okay, we're moving on from my first game, but the new game, the game 2.0, it's something sporty and then something that like a utility vehicle as well.
Something like a utility vehicle as well.
Yeah, so I guess you need a sporty car and an SUV car.
Sporty car?
$100,000.
Sporty car.
My sporty car is going to be a Audi TTS.
What are they starting at?
You can get a couple secondhand ones for around $60,000 and they go up from that, I reckon. Around $60,000. And I think, so I got $40,000 left over for my SUV. You're gonna have to tell me your sporty car first, because I'm looking at my SUV right now.
Sporty car, bit of fun.
I'm gonna have a bit of pressure to buy a Ford Territory. we'll see how we go. My budget is quite. I only got 40 grand left, like maximum.
Megane RS.
Oh, I should have picked that. No.
Megane RS for the sporty car.
Yeah, manual.
And for the SUV, this is where it's hard.
Actually, I know what SUV I'm getting.
I reckon I'd get a Cherokee.
Wow. Okay.
I'm pretty sure I'd get a Jeep Cherokee.
Right now, I'm immediately going to Porsche Cayenne, seeing what I can buy for under 40 grand. I found a 2008 KNS that has done 100,000 Ks for 35 grand.
What is it, a KNS? It's an
8-cylinder, 4.8-litre petrol engine.
The fuel within the first year is going to cost you more than that car itself.
I have a feeling. Actually, I found a better one. A 2004 Porsche Cayenne for 15 grand. It's done 300,000 Ks.
Okay.
15 grand Porsche Cayenne.
There you go. Done.
Yeah, I think I'm liking this. Yes, so I've got another 15 grand left over.
So what are you going to buy?
Hang on.
A Prius?
Oh, yes. Maybe I should get like that the tiny little Honda. I remember when I was trying to look out to buy my first car, we found this Honda, a Toyota or a Holden or something. It was a shitmobile for under 15 grand. So whatever that car was, I'm going to get that.
Okay.
Actually, no, I'm not going to get that. I'm going to save my extra 5 grand because I'm getting the $25,000 Cayenne.
That's not 100,000 Ks. Okay.
I'm going to save the extra 5 grand for maintenance because I'm going to need it. I'm going to need it. At 100,000 Ks, I'm going to need maintenance. So there you go. I've got my Audi TT.
Then it'll be on the road.
I've already done my Audi TT. That's done 100,000 Ks.
You're getting two German cars. Yeah. Why not just shoot yourself in the foot and give up?
Yeah. Well, my TTs also, they're renowned for needing their maintenance as well. So this 5 grand is going to go a long way.
Very short way.
Actually, something new. With my 5 grand, I'm going to buy a Porsche-inspired desk chair. Yes. I figured out where I'm going to spend my
exclusively not a part of their net profit margin.
Yeah, that's not. If I bought a Ferrari one, probably.
You'd be probably doing them a favor. So,
apart from my terrible decision, I'm already regretting losing my 100 grand. I should have bought a Territory at an Audi TT. But I just wasted it on a $28,000 Cayenne.
Oh, well. Times are tough.
Yeah, times are tough. So, what's our SUV, Corey? You're a bit more sensible than me.
Nah, Jeep Cherokee.
Jeep Cherokee. I like it. I think we did well.
Cheap, easy to service.
Cheap and easy to service. As long as you don't have faults with those 2015 ones that got recalled.
Oh, I remember that now.
Yeah.
Very clever. Why'd they get recalled, Kirk?
They got recalled, I believe, because of a transmission failure that made a few of the cars roll back. But you popped it in park, didn't properly get into park, leave it into neutral, and it rolled back on people. So maybe you could spend a couple extra spare change getting wood blocks to put behind your car.
There you go, with my single $20 left.
We've decided it. So what did we buy for 200 grand? We bought an Audi TT.
200 grand?
Yeah, well, like the two of us combined.
Ah, for the 200.
So we bought an Audi TT, a Megane RS, a new clutch for your Megane RS. we don't have enough budget for that. Okay, so you're gonna get 2,000 Ks on that, and you're gonna clutch kick it. After that, we got a Jeep Cherokee, we got a Porsche desk chair, and we got some wooden blocks.
That is gonna move further than your KN.
Yes,
the desk chair will make it further.
Yes,
there will be more Ks on that desk chair.
I am actually, in fact, there will be more Ks on it by the end of it, because you're gonna be pushing me down a hill, and then I'm gonna be riding by myself with that desk chair.
There is nothing else.
I'm pretty happy with my purchases. Are you happy with your purchase?
Yeah, no, I'm stoked. I reckon that'd be awesome.
Yeah, okay, I'm not happy with my purchase. I want to go back to the dealership. How can I quickly make 100 grand? Look, I'm going to sell my Audi. It's going to have depreciation. So.
You're going to get half of what you paid for it.
Anyway.
Alrighty.
Well, I just realized, Corey, I am so silly. I could have bought a 2010 Cayman GTS for 30 grand.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
That's only done 50,000 Ks.
No.
I'm going back to it. I could have bought two Porsches. Oh, I'm killing myself. I'm not happy. This game was hard and I failed. But there you go. That does it for this podcast. Corey and I just wasted 200 grand. Imaginary Monopoly money. But, you know, we did well. We did very well.
Lehman Dream.
Lehman Dream. But, you know, to recap, we did not build GT2 RSs for the whole video. But I think
only for half.
This was a very fake expensive episode, I have to admit.
It was a lot of dreaming.
A lot of dreaming. A lot of dreaming. From 720S to GT2 RS to Porsche DTS desk chair. You can find Corey at
Corey Holman. Corey underscore Holman.
Corey underscore Holman.
I think.
At Porsche DTS desk chair.com.
If I can remember.
Wait, no, that's me. And let's, you can just find me somewhere.
Let's just put it somewhere in the description.
I'll pop it down there. Anyway, I'm with Corey. We had no guest today because we killed the other one. We killed Marcel from the last episode.
I think
he
killed himself in that proton.
Yep, probably. And we will see you all in the next Project Cars podcast episode.
Ciao. Bye. See ya.
Bye.
Bye.